The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. This was one of the summer of 2005's acclaimed, denunciated, and overlooked motion pictures. Yes, love it, hate it, or ignore it, or all of the above. However you feel about it, you must see this movie, and I'll tell you why in just a moment on Be the Story. Hi, welcome to Be the Story. I'm Tim King. A funny thing happened this week in producing Be the Story. You may not know it, but I generally do an awful lot of post-production editing. This week, I was in the final stages of editing, and I did something really, really, really stupid, and I erased everything. Yes, everything. All of my notes, every single sample of audio that I had recorded and edited and processed. And after the initial shock wore off, and then after I stopped hyperventilating, I felt maybe I was ready to give it a go and try to re-record and reproduce this as fast as possible. I think I remember all of what I said and what I wanted to say. Maybe this one will turn out even better than it had before, because I had already done it once before. So, we'll see. In any case, let this be a lesson to all of you podcasters listening. Back up your work, even while you're in editing. Keep frequent backups. And by frequent, I mean maybe every hour. Enough said. So, now that I have your sympathies, let me talk to you about the big news item this week on Distributing the Future, which is an O'Reilly Network podcast. The latest episode is called Security, DRM, and Sony. This episode is essential listening for any podcasters and anyone who listens to CDs or anyone who watches DVDs. From the description and précis, you might think this is just another rant about the Sony DRM brouhaha, but it's not. This podcast presents an essential overview of DRM, that's digital rights management, for content users and small producers. The Sony thing is just a fortuitous example that they used in a frank, easy-to-follow discussion about DRM. One point that they made that really resonated with me is that DRM treats legitimate users as though they were attackers. DRM tries to limit legitimate uses of the content to what content producers consider to be reasonable, rather than what the copyright law considers to be reasonable, or the spirit of copyright would consider to be reasonable. You know, this past week, I was listening to a podcast about Google AdWords and advertising. In advertising, you can make very small changes, like change a single word, or change the order of a couple words or a couple lines, and have tremendous results. And with Google AdWords, because Google AdWords is all electronic, it's all done over the internet, you can find out very quickly and very inexpensively how these tiny changes affect the effectiveness of your ads. So you can make a tiny change, like just change a single word, and find that your ad now is 10 times as effective as it used to be, or a tenth as effective as it used to be. This is the same sort of a dramatic effect from a small change in wording. DRM tries to limit legitimate use to what the content producer considers to be reasonable, rather than what the spirit of copyright would consider to be reasonable. That tiny difference is significant because it tries to give the content producer control over legitimate use. Uses like review, commentary, even criticism. Now, if you were a giant media conglomerate, or even if not, would you make sure everyone who wanted to critique your work had a fair use copy of it? Even if they were going to rip it to shreds? Even if they're an independent commentator? What about political activists? The ability to review and criticize published works is essential to a podcast like this, and I expect there to be many more such podcasts, such as video and movie review podcasts, and not all of them will follow conventional standards of critique. One of the neat things about podcasting is that you can publish content that speaks even just to a small audience, because it's so inexpensive to podcast. You do not need a TV station. You don't need a radio station. That's why there are so many interesting shows out there that are interesting only to a small audience. Maybe me and you and a few other people. We are witnessing the democratization of media, and the established media ain't gonna take it quietly. And DRM is one of the bombs they will drop on us. The language of DRM treats legitimate users as though they're potential attackers. In the DRM war, the true attackers end up being content producers who rely on DRM. It has to be this way because DRM is technologically bankrupt. It can't work. Therefore, the only alternative is to resort to raw force. In the Sony DRM that caused all the hubbub, Sony's DRM on some of their CDs, which they thankfully have now stopped distributing, but there are a few CDs still out there that have this DRM on it. The Sony DRM conceptually was based on a cracker tool called a rootkit. Rootkits are used to hack up Unix systems. See, a rootkit allows a cracker to get super user access to the Unix system anytime he wants to. In order to do this, the rootkit surreptitiously replaces parts of the computer's operating system and then covers up its own tracks so that you can't even tell it's there. Usually, the only way to recover from this kind of attack is to wipe the system completely and reinstall everything from scratch. In the annals of computer security, people have gone to jail for less than this. At least people without deep pockets and strong political connections. And now, since I don't have a sidekick to say what you're all thinking, yeah, Tim, but how do you really feel about it? The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, that's what I really wanted to talk about today. Despite its flaws, I found this to be a really, really good story. Chances are, you'll either love it or you'll hate it. If you love it, it's probably because the movie makes you cry, and every time you watch it again, it makes you cry even more. And if you hate it, it's probably because the movie makes you cry, and every time you watch it again, it makes you cry even more. Or to paraphrase the ad copy, you'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll wear the pants. And you'll be the story. Get it? It's a metaphor.
Hi, this is Mer Lafferty from Geek Foo Action Grip. I'd like to take a break from this excellent podcast to tell you about Hurricane Katrina. Well, it's very likely you already know about Hurricane Katrina, but what you may not know, and what may interest you, is that in the wake of the disaster, several professionals from the RPG industry, including writers, editors, illustrators, and layout, got together and wrote a book. Beyond the Storm, Shadows of the Big Easy, is a collection of short stories, essays, art, and role-playing game materials inspired by the culture, landscape, and city of New Orleans. With contributions from three continents and from across the spectrum of role-playing, the book has all proceeds from the sale going to support Katrina Disaster Relief. Join the authors and artists as they explore the Big Easy as it could have been and how it might be in the future. Beyond the Storm is now available for purchase in PDF and print formats. You can check it out at lulu.com or beyondthestorm.us.
What was in the package? Just those pair of pants over there. Sharing them with my friends for the summer.
These? What's so great about an old pair of jeans?
Nothing. They just happen to mysteriously fit us all perfectly.
Really?
My karma poochie. I'm writing from the post office, and this express mail costs more than I make in 2 hours at Walman's. So these jeans better get to you tomorrow.
Here we are on a typical Bethesda corner where generations of young entrepreneurs have proved the old adage, when life hands you lemons, make lemonade. So the question on my mind is this fresh squeezed or powder?
What does it matter if it's good lemonade?
Let me ask the questions.
I'm sad to report that absolutely nothing of consequence happened to me while wearing the pants. I spilled a Sprite, and Duncan, my rat-faced manager, accused me of receipt withholding.
Receipt withholding?
In rat-faced manager lingo, that means forgetting to give the customer a sales slip.
You know, I was reading that Bill Gates, when he was younger, he ran a lemonade stand.
That, you don't know that. That's not...
Yeah, I do. I read it in a magazine.
Where did you read that?
In a magazine.
Other than that, the only thing that I have to show for the pants is the kid that delivered them. Some wise-ass pain in the neck who's decided to permanently glue herself to my hip.
She's just tired.
That's what she is.
She's been there a really long time, all day.
What is she doing right there? Tell me.
She's just thinking.
She's strategizing. I think she's trying to grow a brain. That's what she's doing.
Too bad you can't express male 12-year-olds.
And I wish you the very best of luck on this endeavor.
That pretty much summarizes the premise behind the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. This is actually a scene from about 45 minutes into the film between Tibby, who is one of the main characters, and her 12-year-old protege, Bailey. The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants is about four 16-year-old girls, inseparable almost since they were born, now spending their first summer apart. While browsing a thrift store, they find a pair of jeans that fits them each perfectly. As if the pants were magic, they make a pact. Each one of the girls will get the pants for a week, then overnight them to the next girl, along with a letter describing everything that happened while she had the pants. Now, I'm not doing a review of this movie. If you're interested in reading reviews, there are lots of them on the internet, and I provided a few links to what I think are good reviews on BeTheStory.com. A lot of reviewers I found didn't really get this movie. They concentrated on the setting, such as Lena's trip to Greece, or on the viewership market this movie targets, or on the plot, even though this is a character-driven story, or even on the pants. Yes, it actually surprised me how few reviewers seemed to understand that this movie is not actually about a pair of traveling pants. But I'll get to that in a second. The biggest problem I saw with The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants is that there are too many viewpoint characters for the amount of time allotted for the movie. It's a 2-hour movie, which is actually kind of long for a movie. Still, we needed at least another hour to tell the stories of all four of these girls. As a result, the establishing conflicts in the introduction went by way too fast, and it was very difficult for me to get into the movie, even to understand it the first time I watched it. Also, the girls' stories do not get the in-depth treatment that they really need. With regards to the introduction, there were four establishing conflicts, and the movie treated these in 4 minutes. None of these conflicts made a complete story arc, even an abbreviated story arc. And most of them I didn't even understand when I was watching it the first time, and I certainly didn't feel any of these conflicts. None of these caused me to sympathize with the characters. It was only much later that I really began to sympathize with the characters. One of these conflicts was even key to understanding Bridget's story and Bridget's character. In the introduction, there is a funeral scene. I had to watch the movie 3 times before I understood that that funeral scene was Bridget's mother's funeral. And it wasn't until I saw it a 4th time that I understood that Bridget's mother had committed suicide. This scene is also important because it shows Bridget's reaction to her mother's suicide. Bridget simply didn't want to deal with it. All of these things were very important to understanding who Bridget is and why she's behaving the way she does. But in general, Bridget's story got short shrift. In fact, they probably should have eluded Bridget's character for the movie and expanded the other storylines in order to go into more depth with them. Now, I read, it seems like, dozens of reviews. My first question on reading these reviews was, did any women review this film? Actually, a few did, but even they didn't really get it. In particular, very few reviewers got the fact that this movie is not about a pair of traveling pants. It is true, the pants are presented as a gimmick, and they tie together the 4 storylines. But the real profundity of the pants is that they establish a pattern between the 4 different stories. In each story, when the girl gets the pants the first time, something happens to her that challenges who she is. This, of course, she sees as being a bad thing, and she discounts the magic value of the pants. But the story has been set in motion. The conflict gets thicker and thicker and escalates until the 2nd time that girl gets the pants. At that point, some change happens inside of her, and the conflict resolves. Let's look at Tibby's story. Tibby actually meets Bailey before she gets the pants the first time. Over her summer, she's working at Walman's, a chain superstore, in order to make some extra cash to support her filmmaking hobby. On a typical Tibby dreary day, she suddenly hears a thud in the next aisle, and upon investigating, discovers a small girl passed out on the floor. Now, some reviewers did mention that it is a bit of a cliche to have a child pass out near the beginning of the movie, and surprise, surprise, it turns out this child has a terminal illness. Yes, I guess it is a bit of a cliche, even sappy. Unfortunately, I was too busy observing Tibby's reaction to notice that there were any cliches. When Tibby gets the pants, they're at first actually delivered to Bailey's house by mistake. Bailey takes it upon herself to correct the mistake and discovers Tibby, who had helped her in the store. This scene establishes the tension between Tibby and Bailey. But at the same time, it also further establishes Tibby's feelings for Bailey. For all her protestations, it's quite obvious that she cares about this little girl. A week later, Tibby sends the pants on to Carmen. Later in the story, when Tibby discovers that Bailey has leukemia, the conflict within her just thickens. This story also uses character reaction to drive audience reaction. Orson Scott Card once wrote, "If your characters cry, your readers won't have to. If characters have a good reason to cry, and they don't, the reader will." But this oversimplifies, as we can see from The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. In this film, the characters cry, and we cry along with them. Perhaps we can understand why by looking at what H.P. Lovecraft said about his own writing of horror. He wrote in his Notes on Writing Weird Fiction, quote, "Inconceivable events and conditions have a special handicap to overcome, and this can be accomplished only through the maintenance of a careful realism in every phase of the story, except that touching on the one given marvel. This marvel must be treated very impressively and deliberately, with a careful emotional build-up, else it will seem flat and unconvincing. Being the principal thing in the story, its mere existence should overshadow the characters and events. But the characters and events must be consistent and natural, except where they touch the single marvel. In relation to the central wonder, the characters should show the same overwhelming emotion which similar characters would show toward such a wonder in real life. Never have a wonder taken for granted, even when the characters are supposed to be accustomed to the wonder. I try to weave an air of awe and impressiveness corresponding to what the reader should feel." Unquote. When Tibby gets the pants the second time, she doesn't even wear them. Instead, she takes them to Bailey in the hospital. Before this, Tibby didn't even want to think about going to the hospital. She had several opportunities to go visit Bailey. She made up reasons why she couldn't make it, or didn't want to, or why Bailey was not really a close friend, or whatever. As Tibby faces her demons, this young Grim Reaper stand-in is suddenly displaying emotions that we knew were always there, begging to get out. We sympathize with her. We empathize with her. We identify so thoroughly with the character that when the character responds, we respond. When the character cries, we cry right along with her. We can't even help ourselves. This pattern we see repeated over and over and over and over again. Four completely separate storylines, four completely different characters, four completely different conflicts. Each of these characters overcomes her own internal barriers. Watching the movie is like getting hit with an emotional machine gun. Some final thoughts in just a minute.
Since the earliest times, people have gathered together to tell stories, to share their love for the great characters of old, to hold up the dark mirror of myth in order to see themselves in the light of truth and beauty. Here at the Bears Grow podcast, the law is that stories have life, and that our lives are made greater by their inclusion. Here we support storytelling in all its practices, but most specifically, the form of role-playing. Each week, we've explored the complicated landscape of dreams and wonder. We discuss such diverse role-playing topics as kids and role-playing, romantic storytelling, and good story design in every role-playing genre, from dark future sci-fi to high magic fantasy to gothic terror. In future episodes, we'll have interviews with gaming visionaries and cutting-edge role-players, segments on good storytelling practice, and on somewhat controversial gaming topics such as sex, religion, and excessive violence in role-playing games. Join me, Sam Chupp, the co-creator of Wraith the Oblivion and Changeling the Dreaming, in a never-ending quest for the Holy Grail of gaming. Your journey with me starts on the web at bearsgrove.blogspot.com. Meet you at the Bears Grove!
Appreciate hearing from the people who download this podcast and presumably listen to it. If you want to, you can post comments on anything we discuss here at bethestory.com, or if you'd rather just send me an email, you can do that too. I appreciate all suggestions on what we should do in this podcast or features that should be available on bethestory.com. The last couple of weeks of December, I'm taking off from my regular day job. Instead, I plan to read a lot and watch a lot of TV and or movies and play at least one adventure game. And I plan to talk about what I did over these couple of weeks in the new year on this podcast. So if you would like a particular work to be discussed on this podcast, let me know. Also note that if you have any particular opinions, I would love to discuss them in this podcast, even if you completely disagree with me. Just go to bethestory.com in the upper right-hand corner. There's an email link. Send me your suggestions. Next week on Be the Story, I'd like to take a look at a few works submitted for the November Alkara Project. The Alkara Project is a monthly writing group run by Lori Murray. Each month she posts 5 writing prompts, and we can choose one or more than one to write to. And some of the submissions are worth talking about. So I'm going to talk about them next week on Be the Story. I'll see you then.